This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We have the new Witter Binner Fellow for the coming year, and it is Forrest Gander. He was chosen by William Stanley Merwin, our U.S. Poet Laureate. And Forrest is going to introduce himself with an opening poem.
This poem is called Road and Tree and was written for a photograph by Sally Mann, a photographer who lives in Virginia, where I grew up. Road and Tree. Lucent Road, first letter, evening, spooked with light. Quarter Moon Road, with the darkness inside it, and full moon, sky with the tree inside it. Curved road in the gloaming. Oak trunk, a vector of force, punched upward, held in place by the stenciled circle of light, lit road bearing a trunk of its own darkness. Circle of light split, like a cat's eye, road curling left, eye cutting right, barely there in the soft dirt, footprints and dog prints commingling in the road, where voices also have fallen with pollen. This is an inner landscape, for even as light came back like bees to the camera proclaiming the photograph, the place altered, never availed itself at all, a hem of cirrus brushed the sun, the Carolina wren's cheerie gave way to a full moon in the afternoon, and little grass frogs. Dry puffballs detonated into a cloud of gold spores as a hoof lifted, and even if it had pictured a real terrain for one moment, of what place is it a memory now? The image strands itself, a word knocked loose from the language, a tooth under a pillow, and the place itself was neither fully read nor erased, since it never ceased being written. Only a word was pronounced. Only the instrument clicked.
That is the voice of Forrest Gander. In my hand, I have your new galleys for a brand new book, Coarse Samples from the World. Tell us what this book is about.
This book's mostly about our engagement with others, both here and abroad, the notion that we have to take responsibility and account of our relationships with many others.
You've traversed the world in this book. We find Chile, China, Sarajevo. You've been all over the place. And I was wondering, as you wrote it, was there a change in your beliefs and ideas as you wrote it from your convictions when you were there? As you wrote it, what changed about your feelings?
Well, that's what I think is so important about traveling, is that when you go to different places, the rhythms of speech, the landscape itself, change your patterns of perception, and that can expand how you feel things and how you engage the world.
But as you think about them, your memory of them, doesn't that change the experience, though? And do you have a really good memory?
I have a really good capacity to write notes when I'm in places.
I wonder about that. I love the way you borrow little inscriptions from relics and artifacts. I think you could write a book with bumper stickers. I do. You just grab and take. Do you plan that ahead of time and say, I think this is going to go there? Do you plan those inserts?
No. I sort of gather a lot of material and then begin to orchestrate it.
Forrest Gander, we had a radiant reading last night at the Library of Congress, and we welcome you here. This is who he is. He's a professor of comparative literature at Brown. He was born in California.
Barstow,
near the Mojave Desert.
That's in the smack dab
middle
of it. I mean, why?
Really? And then grew up in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
You're called a Southern poet, but I have to think about that, what that means. We'll talk about that. I'm not sure you are a Southern poet.
I'm not sure either.
No.
Yeah.
And you hold degrees in geology and literature. Your advanced degree was from San Francisco State.
Right.
And you have an orchard, a small orchard. That's all they need to know for starts.
Okay. That's good.
But we do want to hear more poetry. This is Forrest Gander, our new Witterbinner Fellow. I'm Grace Cavalieri. More poems.
Okay. This is a poem that I'm writing a series of poems now for two dancers, Ieko and Koma, who come out of the Buto tradition but are post-Buto dancers. They live in the United States but perform all over the world.
Tell us what Buto dancers
so
are.
So Buto is a kind of post-war avant-garde dance that developed in Japan starting in the 60s with these two famous dancers, Kazuo Ono and Hijikata. And it is very dramatic. These two dancers often mostly perform in the nude. They're in their 60s now. And they move with incredible slowness. And seeing the body in configurations that you've never seen before and at speeds that we're really unfamiliar with is in a way like in core samples traveling to a different landscape and having your perception and the speed of your perception change.
Wow.
So this is a poem called Raven, which is the title of one of their dances. Until they share a common edge, they scrape around in confines of blindness, skin on skin as mind, looking overhead at her own hand, exposed ardency, foot fully pointed. The carotid takes a slightly curved course north of his breastbone. Then it finishes, his white flower breath, as though the head loosened from its stem, falling back unsupported. He accepts the straw and hide, and from behind her shove, as a gift, sacrum to sacrum, and his fingers to her face, her hair swallows his wrist. Of some mutilated offering, these are the black feathers, the canoe bone in her shin, and ashes from his body rising.
That is yet unpublished.
That is right.
You know, I look at your book, and one thing is clear. You love to work with photographers. And Core Samples is filled with brilliant photography. Are they all from the same one?
No. In Core Samples from the World, I'm working with three photographers, two American photographers, Raymond Meeks, who I've worked with before. We've done a couple books with that Nesraeli Press printed. And with a young photographer, fantastic photographer named Lucas Folia, who has been photographing what we used to call utopian communities and now are more often called intentional communities all around the country, including in Virginia. And I've also been part of the collaboration is with a great Mexican photographer named Graciela Iturbide.
Who did the photos for Love Green?
Love Green is Raymond Meeks.
Did the photos come first?
The photos did come first.
Because that is such an exactitude of what you see and what you say is like pictures from Bruegel. You know, there was just no seam between the words and the photos. What a relationship you must have.
I'm so glad that you like them.
It's a beautiful book. It is a physically beautiful book. But let's hear some more poems, and I'll tell them who you are. You are also a novelist and translator of poetry, and your works include Eye Against Eye, Torn Awake, and the translation Firefly Under the Tongue. That's recent selected poems of Corel Bracho. But that's not all. You are a master translator of Latin American authors. You've done Mexican anthologies. You've done a trilogy.
I've done a couple books by a great Bolivian writer named Jaime Sáenz, and I've translated a number of Mexican writers, including a book that'll be coming out in a few months by Pura López Calumet.
Yes, I saw that. And I enjoyed very much the modesty in your travels when you said if you talk the other language too fast and you start showing off, you make mistakes and you get in big trouble with grammar. And I loved that so much because here you're a master linguist, but you still get nervous.
Oh, of course I still get nervous. I'm nervous now.
We're speaking the tongue, though.
But in another language, right, it's much worse. And the more that often, the more that you try to fit in, at least in my case, the faster you talk, the more mistakes you make. And so you try to talk faster to make up for those mistakes and sound fluent. And it just digs you a deeper and deeper pit.
But that is what is so lovely about this book, that you go out almost like a photojournalist of poetry. And like Stephen Crane or Louise Bogan, you know, journalist poet. But you're still very vulnerable in these situations. And you let us know how it feels to be other. That's what the book's about.
Yes, and thanks for saying that. That does seem very much to be, for me, what the book is about in seeing strangers, feeling one's own strangeness, one's own foreignness, and being educated by that realization of our difference from others. And I think that poetry, and maybe a lot of the art that I care about most, has to do with becoming vulnerable, that we spend so much time building a kind of armor around ourselves of habit and comfort, and that to be put into a position where you're vulnerable again makes you open in a way that is ethically important.
Let us hear another poem. That's Forrest Gander. We're at the Library of Congress.
Well, Grace, you mentioned translation and that book by Coral Bracho called Firefly Under the Tongue. I think I'll read a poem by Coral Bracho. Does that seem okay?
Oh, please, in Spanish?
I'll read a little bit in Spanish and then switch to the English. Does that sound okay?
Oh, I'd love it.
All right. So this is Dame Tierra Tu Noche. En tus aguas profundas, en su quietud de jade, acójame tierra espectral, tierra de silencios y bríos, de sueños breves como constelaciones, como vetas de sol en un ojo de tigre. Dame tu oscuro rostro, tu tiempo terso para cubrirme, tu suave voz, con trazos finos hablaría. And in English it goes on. Give me, earth, your night. In your fathomless waters, in their jade quietude, welcome me, spectral earth, earth of silences and scintillations, of dreams furtive as constellations, like filaments of sun in a tiger's eye. Give me your dark face, your clear time to cover me, your soft voice. In gentlest tones, I'd speak with quartz sand and draw out this murmuring, this spring bordered by crystals. Give me your night, the igneous expression of your night. So I might begin to see. Give me your abyss and your black mirror. The depths open up like star fruit, like universes of amethyst under the light. Give me their ardor. Give me their ephemeral sky, their occult green. Some path will clear for me, some tinge in the coastal waters. Among your tenebrous forests, earth, give me silence and intoxication. Give me a wafer of time, the flickering and flaking ember of time, its exultant core, its fire, the echo under the deepened labyrinth. Give me your solitude, and in it, beneath your obsidian fervor, from your walls and before the breaking day, give me in a crevice the threshold and its furtive flamboyance.
Is that in print?
That is in print. That's from a book called Firefly Under the Tongue.
And who published that?
That's New Directions.
All New Directions.
Publishes.
Right, and that's all, as well, course samples from the Earth as New Directions.
Right.
We need to tell people that. That's like coming out this very minute as we speak.
It should be coming out very soon.
All of your work, in fact, you ask the question, how successfully can our feelings be transferred from culture to culture? You ask that question somewhere along the line.
I do.
And what is the answer?
The answer is translation, which is why I think it's really important for people to be interested in other languages besides English, that in translation, we are translated, that different images and rhythmic patterns and ways of constructing syntax bring different subtleties to feeling.
And you don't take the literal translation. You do it from the original text, right? I mean, I've had people give me literal translations I've changed to poetry. But
yes.
You go right, you're right to the source.
Yes.
You don't have someone in the middle doing the literal first.
No.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And I think of that as an act of humility, which is sort of how I think of writing also, that you sort of have to disappear yourself to listen intently to the music of someone else's mind.
As Merwin said last night, it's not equivalent to, but equal to, in a way. There's a difference. And I think that you were chosen, two of you, as Merwin's favorite translators in the country. That's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
But it's a great privilege to have you here. Let's hear another poem. Forrest Gander, I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Thanks, Grace. This poem is from the new book, Core Samples from the World, and it's called Evaporation. In increments enunciated, oh, within, where the meanings in increments lie bare, she says, oh, to her friend, who is watching, I am watching, a cat's link while we walk, keeping pace with us through the fenestrated walls, adobe, of a ruined house, oh, this finger, in the village where she grew up, her accent makes clear. This finger, she says, delighted, holding it up, has a heart in it, pulse, and thinking I don't see the friend, she takes from her purse a toothpaste tube, purse open. As she walks, we walk, where's the cat? Along the soft path between adobe walls, squeezes toothpaste on her finger with its heart, and smears it, looking away, against her upper and still looking away, lower teeth, then touches me with her breath.
What's that from?
That's from being in Mexico and traveling with someone and thinking about how the gestures that we want to hide from people can be so revealing of intimate feelings
what
and
book
friendship.
Is that from?
That's going to be in the new book. That's Core Samples from the World.
What gets me, that actually supports my theory about you. That is very immediate. It's as it happens.
Yes.
In your earlier works, when you write sometimes, it's as if there is someone standing right outside the poem, as if there's just someone there in the wings that you're alluding to or writing for or writing to. But in this book, you're very inward as you travel outward. You're very focused. It's a very different feel to me about this book. Do you have that sense of it?
Thanks for saying that, Grace. It is. I'm really interested in the present, in the event of the present, and in trying to find a language that's attentive enough to try to bring in that fullness.
That is what that poem demonstrates. I'm so glad you read that to us.
Great.
But could a woman have gone all the places you go? I mean, you're really an adventurer. And, you know, in the book, you wake up and some roommate's snoring by you. You know, you grab a cab from one village to another. Women poets really don't have that available, do they, so much?
They certainly didn't so much in the past, and I think...
I mean, you rough it pretty much.
I've done some roughing it. I feel a little beyond my roughing years now, and I don't want to sleep in some of the places I've slept
That's
in
what I mean.
Again.
Or climb some of the places you've climbed.
No.
But, you know, that's why we need the book, so we can be there.
That's what I hope. Yeah. Yeah.
Forrest Gander, and he's going to read us another poem.
So I've been very interested in Japanese poetry, and not only these Japanese dancers that I'm working with, but contemporary Japanese poets. And I've been working on translation. I studied Japanese, not enough to do more than embarrass myself in Japan when I went, a couple times I've gone. But I've been translating a poet named Kiwao Nomura with a co-translator, Kyoko Yoshida. And this is a book that's coming out this year from a press called Omnidon in California. And so this is called Barely Hinged by Kiwao Nomura. And he's interested in sort of the shamanistic practices of poetry. Barely Hinged. Now, in persistent strings of rain, I've seen a bird fluttering, gone from sight. Which is to say, persistently, I've seen a fluttering bird gone from sight. So to speak, in another incantation, seen, I've gone from sight, a bird fluttering. And so it goes in vain. Seen, a bird fluttering, I've gone from sight. Quiet around here, it's completely quiet. A bird, I've gone from sight, seen fluttering, reverie, enough. A bird gone from sight, seen fluttering. I've embraced or engraved fluttering. I've gone from sight, seeing a bird, reverie enough. Fluttering, seen a bird gone from sight. I've gone quiet here. It's completely quiet. Gone from the sight, fluttering. I, a bird seen, and so it goes in vain. Gone from sight. A bird seen, I fluttering, so to speak, in another incantation, a bird fluttering, seen, I've gone from sight, which is to say persistently, a bird, I fluttering, gone from sight, seen, now, in persistent strings of rain.
That is marvelous. And so we fly with it. Do you like that?
That's great.
True. Do you like that poem?
I love that poem. And
I could tell.
Yeah.
So you love the culture.
I do love the culture. And there are just some very interesting poets in Japan right now. Gozo Yoshimasu and Kawao Nomura are two of the ones that interest me the most. And they're interested in sort of recovering a very earth-related sense of language.
What does that mean?
That this notion in shamanism that the power of language comes out of the earth, and our connection with the earth, and that language can project something that's mystical and powerful and originary.
You got it. You're the one. I was at this morning, the guy next door was talking about John Coltrane, and he said, you have to listen against the ear. And I thought, this is great. And in that poem, you had to listen against the ear. It's almost like, you know, it's Asian, but it's almost jazz, the way you stand words on edge like that. But, you know, I don't think you're an experimental poet. Now, here's my problem.
I'm glad.
Thank you. Robert Haas said, let me see exactly what he said, that you are a relatively rare kind, we agree, a restlessly experimental writer. Now, I know you're restless, and thank you for that. It's brilliant. But, you know, experimental means I can't understand it. And you always have a narrative. You always have something we track. So do you think you're venturesome, you try new genres, but do you really think you're experimental? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't like that word either.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you know, it's like you can't have an experimental baby, that, you know, that we're giving birth to things I value innovation.
That's great.
But I'm very interested in the ethics of connection.
And your work is very elegant, classical, actually, at its core, classical, and has a through line. It has a through line we always follow, whether it's an emotional one or a narrative. But we will be reading some final poems now.
Okay.
Do you have a couple?
Yeah. Maybe I'll try to read something from... Maybe I can just read part of a poem from the new manuscript that involves, since we're here in D.C., interesting that you mentioned jazz, because coming into your office here, I saw the great Mingus poster right away.
This is the home, the house of memory. This is where it's at, the jazz collection.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
This is a beautiful place.
So this is the beginning of a poem that's written for photographs by Lucas Foglia, and that's based on the interviews with people living in intentional communities around the United States and in Virginia.
Would you just identify what that means?
Oh, it's so people that have gone off the grid, more or less, to live in communities that often gather their own food, sometimes are for political or religious reasons or combinations of both.
We did
build
that in
their
the
own
60s.
Homes. Yes.
We were hippies.
That's right.
That's what it is.
That's what it comes from, yes. And so this photographer has been traveling around the country and living in those communities and getting to know the people and talking to them and photographing them.
While you're looking for the poem, you have a very fancy chair that you occupy at Brown, and I can't remember the name of it. Would you give me the name?
It's called the Adele Kellenberg Seaver chair.
I'm glad to hear it. Okay.
So this is the poem, Moving Around for the Light, a madrigal. And it's a longer poem, so I'll just read a little bit of it so that you get a sense of it. For Utopia, Virginia. The natural order of things. Sugar bushing. Some things we do would gross people out because they just don't know. Always was baffled by the connections in life. It's moving around for the light. I thought, that plant's growing before my eyes. It's insane. What the news media don't want you to know about. All the wild edible plants, for instance. Getting on good here, blacks and white. No fossil fuel-based technology. I've eaten owl. Wing mussels and leg mussels, that's the only meat on him. So much roadkill, beavers, otters, deer, raccoon. We cook 'em up, preserve the hide instead of slashing it. Got it laid out real clear.
That is from Core Samples from the World.
So this is also from the Iako and Koma collaboration with those two dancers. Tempestration. Nothing but in care of. Advanced with her eyelids lifted, his way unchalked, the back-bent night. Nothing but in care of thee, so dedicated to closeness in the singed nothing, against what should ensue, black-brushed with hair, even in dream advanced, ravened with a feather, into this last tempest. What should ensue, who have changed eyes?
What a great last line. Our poet is Forrest Gander. He's our new Witterbinner Fellow at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Grace.